Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the March 10 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Jerry Goodell of Rice Dairy out of Chicago, Illinois, Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, and Elaine Cubb of ElaineCubb.com out of Elkhorn, Nebraska. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Let's start with our list of questions. Greg Johnson of the Andersons, which item should we discuss today?
I think one of the more immediate items that we'll be talking about next week probably is the Chinese government's decision on what they're going to do with corn support prices. The rumor is that they've got a big chunk of old crop corn that they're storing and that they're getting tired of paying storage on that, and they may change their policies to get that corn working into the market, and how they do that and when they do that probably is something that we should talk about.
That sounds like a question that farmers ask you all the time. I'm tired of paying storage. What should I do? Okay, Elaine Cubb of ElaineCubb.com. What's on your list?
Well, I always like to bring up the dollar because the grain prices really seem to change depending on what that's doing. But today in particular, I think we had such an interesting and wild movement in the dollar that it really makes sense to take a look at that, even if it was, you know, a European story that the grain markets, you know, weren't hugely affected by today. Nevertheless, that volatility is in there, and I think that's something we ought to take a look at.
And Jerry Goodell of Rice Dairy.
Well, I think we're, as we get into the beginnings of this year's planting season, I think we need to start looking at the overall lack of weather premiums in these markets, and in general, the last couple of reports have had kind of negative information, yet when they're all said and done, we seem to be creeping higher. So maybe we're getting some weather premium in there. Maybe we're just tired of everybody being short, lots of different things like that.
Okay, I'm going to start with the U.S. dollar because on Thursday afternoon when this was taped, the dollar had made a fairly large move in Chicago, and I, Elaine, want you to take that up and talk to me about the dollar and how it moves the commodity markets and your thought process as you looked at the dollar on Thursday and the way it moved, I think probably in part because of what happened in Europe on that day.
Right. So it's definitely lower here, and we are seeing grains, particularly wheat, which is, you know, so dependent on a large portion of its market being exported. They're moving higher in response. So these move in opposite patterns, and that's behaving here fine. But when you look at the dollar on a chart, before it went way down, it's about a percentage down from yesterday's close. Before it went way down, it went way up and about a percentage higher. All of this seemed to be based on the European Central Bank making decisions today about how much interest rate they're not going to raise and how much stimulus they're going to put into the economy. So that is probably why the grains aren't overreacting to this very large move in the dollars. Our export, the dollar index itself is heavily weighted according to the European euro, like 60%, I want to say, but our grain exports are not so sensitive to that. We're much more sensitive to ideas of Asian demand and those sort of currencies that are putting in there. But it definitely emphasizes the fact going through 2016 that our U.S. economy is probably strong and our U.S. currency is probably strong, which is not great for commodities. But the only thing that's going to be likely to ever bring that dollar back down or to be a positive for our grain prices or commodity prices is if we can see strength in some of these other foreign countries and particularly developing countries. Europe, not so much. but if Brazil could come out of their recession, if we could see strength and stability in China, those are the kinds of things that really could help our currency situation.
Greg Johnson, you mentioned China. This week, the United States Department of Agriculture said that nation will import about 1.5 million more metric tons of soybeans this year in the current FY marketing year than they had previously. Will that make much of a difference?
Probably not. They did lower the global ending stocks in the March supply and demand report, but it's still at a record ending stocks number for both corn and beans as well as wheat. So even though all three commodities got slightly reduced, the bottom line is there's still plenty of everything out there in the world. So it's probably going to take some kind of a weather problem. It doesn't feel like there's enough demand to really get this market out of the sideways trend that we've been in since the first of the year. And as Elaine said, the U.S. dollar basically is a headwind. I mean, it's not helping us out. You know, technically, if you look at a U.S. dollar index chart, you know, it's been fluctuating back and forth here the last month or two. But if you look at a five-year chart, we're fluctuating back and forth at the top end of the range. So the dollar is still, in general, very strong. And from a fundamental point of view, the U.S. economy is chugging along at 2% growth, which doesn't sound very impressive until you compare it to the European economies and the Japanese economy, which is chugging along at zero to negative growth. So, like I say, from a fundamental point of view, the dollar is probably a headwind. We probably shouldn't look to that for very much support. And as far as China is concerned, they're going to buy a few more beans from us, but we've got a lot more beans in the world to get rid of. So big picture, that's probably not a big bullish factor.
Jerry Goodell, soybeans have rallied a number of days, I think 7 or 8 at this point. Can they continue? And they're at the top end of the sideways trade. What do you think about this marketplace?
Well, it is up at the top side of the range here. The interesting thing is that I guess we'll see. And I'll be very frank. I have not studied at my commitment to traders report, which really has been a factor in this market here. Started even late last Friday, and then over the weekend, everybody already had a higher month because we didn't see that many people bail out of the minor bounce that we had, and we had more support or more shorts in the market. I think that's, in general, I think the market has got to the point where bad news is really not pressing the market all that much, and then good news maybe not following it through too much either in some cases. But in the reality of it is, I think that we're getting smaller and smaller ranges, which ultimately means that if we find any kind of weather issues that pop up, in general, that could end up having a little more significant rally in these markets, because I think there's really a complacency about anything happening. So usually that's when things show up. This week's weather really is not something for soybeans. If anything, it should be for corn in those areas of the Delta and Texas, the North Texas areas, that this is when they want to plant. We've heard people talk about planting in central Illinois here sometime next week, but I think the most important part of the world that wants to get corn planted and get it done before April 1 is going to be the Mississippi's and Arkansas's and Boot Hill and even throw in North Texas. I've got some contacts I've been working with down there for years, and this is the time of year when they want to get that stuff in so they can avoid that heat that starts showing up in mid-June, not mid-July like in the Midwest.
Jerry, it's one thing to talk about the rainfall and the Delta and that might have fallen in the Corpus Christi area and in through the Texas, some of those areas that have already planted corn where they're now underwater. A whole different thing to think about heat that might come into the summer months here in the Midwest as El Nino wanes and becomes La Nina at some point. Is there enough or any premium built into the marketplace for corn and soybeans, maybe even wheat in the South, West or the Great Plains states at this point, based on the weather conditions we think might develop later in the year?
I don't think there really is. When you're sitting here at the low values that we're at here, I think people are just staring at the ending carryover stock and say, well, why me worry? type situation. And to some extent, there's value to that thinking. There's no doubt. But I'd say the same situation is that the vulnerability is that, and the fact that the wet weather scenarios here, rain makes rain is an issue that definitely is there, and that. But at the same time, where you're looking for corn and to be coming in on a seasonal basis to help, take some of the basis risk out there into the season, they ship it through the systems and things like that, or chicken buyers in the south that want to get some new crop corn, if that supply is not there, then that does have a minor impact as we go along through time. You know, all these types of things are we all know, hard sometimes to measure as easy on a percent basis as it is just from the feel of the fact that one thing we've been talking about in this weather, the other day when we were talking, you had a great synopsis about what really we should be looking at here from the standpoint of weather trends. But I'll tell you, the one thing that we've all seen here since last fall, is the fact that we've had different theories that got thrown out there, and then they changed it. And there's been more different weather ideas about what we're going to have ultimately for the summer because of this whole dynamics of the high, strong El Nino and how that's going to change things, how fast it comes down, what direction it is, all these other things. You know, the warm temperatures we have now, is that a guarantee of hot weather this summer? There's all kinds of theories back and forth, and I think that's part of the reason why we maybe don't have that weather premium as maybe as we should.
Greg Johnson, you mentioned that China is in the midst of thinking about making a change in the way they treat corn that's in storage. What do you think will happen, and what is the impact on the marketplace once the decision's made?
Well, number one, we don't know exactly how much old crop corn they've got since they do not release numbers as USDA does. But the private estimates are that they've got a very substantial amount of old crop corn, almost a year's worth of supply on hand, seems to be the general consensus. And so, like I say, they're getting tired of paying storage on that year after year after year. Their support price is much higher than the world price, and so they're trying to figure out a way to ease that price down, without completely causing a lot of distortions. But the bottom line is, a lot of that corn might go into ethanol plants there, because if it's been stored for several years, it's probably not in the best quality. Bottom line is, if they sell some of that corn to other countries, that could compete with U.S. corn exports. And so once again, it's not going to be anything probably very friendly to U.S. corn, because, we either need to have exports go up, feed usage go up, or ethanol usage go up. And the strong dollar and the fact that China may be moving more grain into the world markets is certainly not going to help our export numbers out.
Elaine, how much corn do you think producers have in the bin yet to sell?
Oh, I am afraid that they have probably not moved half of it yet, which means that it's really got to move. And you talk about China being sick of paying storage. There is a cost to storing it, particularly as the weather heats up here. And just logistically, absolutely, we need to have very realistic sort of tempered expectations for how much of a spring rally can ever happen in these old crop prices. And I am not advising anyone to be very optimistic. I'm more advising, this is maybe the time to give up on that and think logistically about getting that moved.
On both corn and soybeans?
Yes. I mean, we don't have what fundamentally can come in at this point to shock the old crop prices. If we have heard, fairly positive things coming out of the South American harvest, we have to give up on a bullish surprise coming from them at this point. Greg did mention that what can happen, he said ethanol, right? That's maybe the one thing. If we had an increase in ethanol usage, that could certainly overtake small decreases. An 11% decrease in our corn export projections can be overshadowed by a 4% increase in our ethanol projections, and that hasn't happened yet, and I'm not saying it's going to happen. But we are seeing retail prices of gasoline spike very early, unseasonably early already in March. So this is a possibility with the strength of the U.S. economy and with hopefully more willing U.S. consumers. It is possible as we go into Memorial Day or go into the summer driving season that we could see increased fuel usage. And I mean, that's really about the only thing that we can pin our hopes on for old crop bullishness, in my opinion.
Greg, can you see a scenario where we have a bigger number for corn used to produce ethanol?
Well, we could see more miles driven. I would agree with that, because even with the run-up in gas prices, we're still below $2, and I think a lot of people are still remembering $3 and $4 gas prices, so $2 seems cheap, so I think people will continue to drive. The problem is that the efficiency of the new cars are offsetting the amount of gas we need to drive those extra miles, so I'm not sure we're going to get a lot of bang for our buck from increased miles. Where we may get a boom is exports. We have been exporting ethanol, and if it could, depending on how that continues to play out, that might help our export or our ethanol production numbers a little bit too. So it may come from exports on ethanol, more so than domestic driving.
Jerry Goodell, what's your thought on the fundamental usage for corn in particular as it relates to the three primary areas for the rest of this fiscal year for feed and ethanol usage and exports?
Well, yes, I've been kind of keeping an eye on that same situation that we've talked about here about ethanol and its export scenarios. Yeah, this year's exports are running pretty comparable to last year's numbers. Maybe overall the last sort of the whole period, we always have this problem of having the actual numbers from the EIA being so far behind us at any one time to know exactly what's happened since the first of the year here. But from the standpoint of definitely the one thing that's really kind of come into fore on the ethanol side of things has been that the Mideast and the Asian areas are using ethanol as its old a factor of the smog buster and maybe an octane booster. It's not because, of course, they can't get gasoline and it's going to be cheaper value and all that kind of stuff, and it's not because of the need to blend it to extend the energy supply. But I think that's definitely a positive now that we've got this conflict that we've all heard about them. And I think the Chinese are probably going to expand their usage of their corn over there to use up some of that poor quality things that Greg mentioned. And that I think the one interesting thing is the one statement he was kind of referring back to here is that there was a fear of this coming up. And if you figured out who the guy that said that was, a COFCO executive that was saying that we're going to have to drop this stuff down, we got to get rid of it. Well, that's a great concept. That's a commercial telling you how to make it cheaper. I don't know that the society over there really wants to have all the farmers over there abandon their ships and show up in the city. So I think the reality of this is that I don't think we're going to have a huge change. They're going to try to make things different. I think they're going to try to end up easing down their price over there and maybe provide more seeds and less of a price support scenario as they go through time. But I think the biggest problem is that it's going to take a while to eke that out of there. I know everybody complains about storing things, but probably half of that stuff that's sitting in China is no good anyway because it's been sitting there too long. From there, on the domestic side, I think we possibly have a chance for a little more backloaded scenario here on the feed side, partly because I think it's not so much we got huge numbers of livestock. It has more to do with the wheats we're creating at this point. And I think that's a positive. Overall, though, exports are still going to be some of a drag here unless we have something happen in safrinha corn. Safrinha corn in Brazil is still edgy here if they're going to get that 85. The weather's been dry. They've had a couple little showers pop up over the last couple weeks. If that stops again and we continue to start into a more traditional dry season before April 1st, I think things could definitely start to change that crop. Maybe we're not going to have 85, maybe be 80 or less. That could be helpful.
Okay, so for old crop, corn and soybeans, I'll ask each of you this question, and I think your answers will be quick and to the point. Since last fall, most have said rallies need to be rewarded. Is that the answer still today, Elaine Cubb, and at what level?
Let's look at the chart, and resistance-wise, you're not going to expect to see a $9 number on soybean futures, back 50 cents off of that. So $8.50 cash price would be as good of a goal as I think you can really hope for. And you might be there in some areas. I think that there's just resistance above that. And corn, let's say if you got a $3.50 price, I think that's about as good as you can hope for.
Greg Johnson?
July corn futures are trading in the mid-360s. We've been trading between 350 and 380. I think that's the range, and anytime you get close to the upper end of that range, farmers need to take advantage of that and get rid of more old crop corn every time we get close to that 375, 380 level on July corn.
And soybeans?
Soybeans, I like selling them here. We're at the highs for the year. Back in December, we were a little bit higher than this, but back in December, we weren't sure the South American crop was going to be as good as it was. And now that they're 50% harvested in Brazil and Argentina's made it through the worst of it, it looks like it's going to be a record crop down there. So I think we have to lower our sights on beans, and these aren't bad prices. You know, if you look at the projected carryout for next year, 500 million bushels, you know, there's a lot more downside than upside in beans. So I like definitely getting rid of old crop beans at these prices.
And Jerry Goodell.
Yes, the soybean side of the thing, it continues to be probably the first thing to look at here in the short term. We are up against this kind of recent 890 value in the May corn, or May soybean, it should be. Well, I keep mixing my metaphors here. There is a chance maybe that in the next week or so we might get a pop of closer to $9 because of some of the repercussions from this weekend, weather that we're having around, or maybe some more traders, that situation. But in general here, you need to step up and be, you know, two-thirds or more sold in the beans. On the corn side of things, you know, it's a little tougher there. We haven't had much of a recovery on that scenario in the short term here on the corn. But the same situation is the longer-term situation on corn is probably more vulnerable on yield than beans are going to be as we look down through the thing. And if we had a 5 or 7 bushel decline in our national average for this 168 they're throwing around, we could change things. But the problem is it's not really here and available to us right now. So looking at that 370, the 375 mentioned by Greg on the July is probably a good place to get to. Things up to approaching 50% or over. I agree with Elaine. There's lots of people that have the bends or are looking at that value, and it makes things a lot tougher to get stuff done between now and September.
Elaine and Jerry, I'll ask you this question because Greg the Anderson sells crop insurance. When producers go to make their crop insurance decisions, should they maintain or reduce their coverage level? And is that coverage level enough today to be satisfied that they have risk covered for the coming year?
Well, even if you bought up somehow, you managed to create a scenario where you had 100% coverage at these prices, at that 386 price or whatever it is, that's not going to guarantee you a profit in a lot of scenarios, particularly with high rent land values or, let's say, out in western Nebraska, where folks are irrigating. That's definitely not going to cover your cost of production in some of these areas. So the second part of your question, no. But whether or not you should be buying up, you know, 75%, 85%, I don't know that there's as much price risk this year as in previous years because we are already so cheap. You know, you're not going to get that same risk protection or put value from that. Of buying that extra coverage this year that you would in some of those years when it was offering you a lot. So I think stay the course. It's a great product. Buy 75% coverage, but, you know, maybe not push it any more than you usually do.
Yeah, I would probably not add to it, but whatever you feel is comfortable in the past. I think the one interesting thing, particularly with the revenue and with the fall price being open, if something does pop and all of a sudden there is some issue in the weather here because of all this whatever implications we've got going of El Nino or El not El Nino or La Nina or whatever it is along the way, that you still have values that you might get some repercussions on. But from the standpoint of if you've been using 80%, I wouldn't go to 85, or would I be at 75 going to 85? There's you're not getting any bang for your buck, particularly in the coverage on there of, you know, from the standpoint of additional risk to the downside on either one of them at this point right now.
And Greg, because they have until Tuesday or the 15th of the month to make this decision, have producers been holding the line? Have you heard from the Andersons what they've been doing with crop insurance across the Midwest?
Yeah, there was a fear initially that farmers would try to, you know, cut costs and either buy down insurance, not buy as much insurance, but we have not been seeing that. I think, you know, the fact that, A, it's, you know, subsidized so that they're not paying the full premium for what they're really getting has helped to some extent. And two, I think they realize that, you know, the insurance protects them not only against the price decline, which, as Elaine mentioned, since we're starting from low levels, you know, maybe there's not as much downside potential there as in past years, but it also protects you against a short crop yield. And if we have higher prices, then it recalculates in October to give you a higher guarantee. So I think for several reasons, a lot of the farmers are sticking with what they've taken in the past. We have not seen them trying to cut costs by cheapening up the insurance premium.
And it probably doesn't hurt that the volatility levels are lower and the premiums, therefore, are lower.
That's
well,
right.
Be my guess. And finally, from you, Greg, what's your thoughts on risk for the new crop? And is crop insurance enough?
No. I mean, you know, as Elaine said, the you know, you're not really guaranteeing yourself a profit, you know, at these current crop insurance levels. So we do have to do some marketing on top of that and rely on the crop insurance as a backstop. So, you know, we just have to look at, I think we have to assume a normal crop and where will prices be if we have a normal crop. And the answer is, in my mind, a lot lower in soybeans. And so I think we want to get new crop beans sold around that $9 level, because that could be a dollar higher than where we are this fall, you know, if we have anything close to a normal crop. I think we have a little bit more time on the corn. But eventually, too, if everything looks good, you know, corn prices will succumb to that as well. So, but I think the first line of defense is to get aggressive on some new crop bean sales.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Joins us on this March 10 edition of Commodity Week, along with Elaine Cub of ElaineCub.com out of Elkhorn, Nebraska. And from Rice Dairy in Chicago, Illinois, Jerry Goodell. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online there at WILLAG.org. That's WillAg.org. You'll also find all of our agricultural programming, from the opening market report to the closing market report and everything in between, including our calendar of events list. Next week, we'll be in Champaign County Monday evening, Thursday in Taylorville, Illinois, and on Saturday, the 19th day of March, we'll be at the Chicago Farmers Farmland Forum. That's at the Joliet Community College in Joliet, Illinois. Find more at chicagofarmers.org. I'm Mule Vi Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.